Hey everyone, welcome back for another deep dive with us. Today we're going to be looking at the book of Hebrews, but we're not just going to be doing like, you know, the typical Sunday school overview kind of thing. We're going a little bit deeper and looking at some of the ways that like ancient social structures, things like patronage, shape the way that Hebrews talks about grace. You know, grace is this incredible gift that we receive from God. But have you ever thought about what grace looked like in the early Christian community? What did it mean to live in a relationship of grace?
It's such a good question. I think we tend to think of grace as this abstract theological concept, but for the early Christians, it was very much embedded in their social world, particularly in the system of patronage.
Okay, so I think we need to back up for a sec. What do we even mean when we say patronage? How does that connect to grace?
Well, imagine a society where you've got power and resources kind of concentrated in the hands of a few wealthy individuals. These are the patrons. And they would extend their generosity to people with less to their clients. This would be in the form of gifts, protection, or social status.
So kind of like a powerful sponsor looking out for somebody.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And in return for these gifts, the clients would be expected to show loyalty and gratitude and service to their patron. So it's this reciprocal relationship built on this exchange of gifts and obligations.
Got it. So how does all of this relate to the book of Hebrews and this concept of grace then?
Well, according to a scholar named Dr. David Da Silva, he's done some really fascinating work on this. The author of Hebrews is actually using this framework of patronage to explain the relationship between God and the Christian community. So God is like the ultimate patron in this scenario, and we as believers are the recipients of his incredible grace.
Okay, that makes sense. So like, how does that actually play out in the text itself, though? What are some of those gifts that God, as the divine patron, gives to his people?
Oh, Hebrews is full of them. It talks about entering into God's rest, inheriting a heavenly homeland, receiving an unshakable kingdom. And these are not just like abstract theological ideas. You know, these are very tangible, life-changing gifts that would have been so significant for the original audience.
Especially because we know that those early Christians were facing some pretty serious persecution, right? So imagine hearing about an unshakable kingdom when your world feels like it's falling apart. That would be a pretty powerful promise.
Absolutely. And that's why understanding the social context of patronage is so crucial for unlocking the full meaning of Hebrews. It's not just about receiving these gifts passively. It's about understanding the responsibilities that come with being in a relationship with a patron as powerful and generous as God.
So it's not just a one-way street. There's this expectation of reciprocity. We have to respond to God's generosity in a fitting way.
Exactly. And that's where things get really interesting, because Hebrews makes it very clear that simply saying thank you isn't enough.
So there's more to it than just good manners. There are actual actions involved.
Absolutely. Remember, in the ancient world, recipients of patronage were expected to show their gratitude through tangible actions, through loyalty service and public acknowledgement of their patron's generosity. And Hebrews calls on us to do the same in our relationship with God.
Okay, I'm intrigued now. So what are some of those specific actions that Hebrews highlights? What did those early Christians do to express their gratitude?
Well, one of the key things that the author emphasizes is the importance of continuing to gather with the Christian community, even when it's dangerous.
Yeah, that makes sense. If your faith is going to make you an outcast, you've got to have that support system, right?
Exactly. And Hebrews also stresses the importance of publicly professing your faith, even when it's costly. You know, in a context where simply being a Christian could get you arrested or even killed, to stand up and say, I believe in Jesus is an incredibly courageous act.
Wow, that really puts things into perspective. Today, you know, the worst that might happen is you get an awkward unfollow on social media. But for them, it was risking everything.
Exactly. And then, of course, there's the call to show love and support to other Christians, practicing hospitality, caring for those in need. These actions, while they seem simple, are powerful expressions of gratitude and loyalty to the divine patron.
It's amazing to see how those ancient social structures can really shed light on some of these passages in Hebrews. But I gotta admit, all this talk about obligation and responsibility makes me wonder about grace being a free gift.
That's such a great point. And it leads us to some of the more challenging and thought-provoking passages in Hebrews. Because while grace is freely given, it's not meant to be passively received. It's meant to transform us, to inspire us to live in a way that reflects this incredible gift.
So how do we make that connection in our own lives? How do we move beyond just acknowledging God's grace to actually allowing it to shape the way we live and the choices we make?
Well, that's the question we're going to be exploring as we continue this deep dive, so stay tuned.
Okay, so we're back. And I really want to dive deeper into this idea of grace as like a reciprocal exchange. It makes sense when we're thinking about ancient patronage. But I'm curious how that translates to our modern understanding of faith.
Right. It really challenges us to kind of rethink some of our common assumptions about grace. For instance, we often hear phrases like unconditional love and eternal security. But Hebrews seems to present a more nuanced perspective on these ideas.
Okay, so break that down for me. How does Hebrews approach these ideas?
Well, let's start with unconditional love. It is absolutely true that God's love for us is boundless and unwavering. But Hebrews reminds us that love isn't passive. It's an active force that compels us to respond. It kind of draws us towards the source of that love.
So it's not just about basking in God's love. It's about allowing that love to shape our lives and our actions.
Exactly. And that brings us to this idea of eternal security. While it can be a comforting concept, Hebrews suggests that true security isn't about a guarantee of salvation, but rather about a life lived in faithful response to God's grace.
So less about like a get out of jail free card, more about a lifelong journey of like transformation and growth.
Exactly. It's about embracing the tension between grace and responsibility, recognizing that while we're freely loved, we are also called to live in a way that reflects that love.
You know, it's interesting. This tension is actually something we see in the writings of Seneca as well. He was a Roman Stoic philosopher who lived around the same time as the author of Hebrews.
Oh, absolutely. Seneca had some really fascinating insights into the dynamics of patronage. For example, he argued that while givers should be generous without keeping score, recipients should always be mindful of the gift and strive to reciprocate it in meaningful ways.
So even in like a secular context, there was an understanding that true generosity wasn't just about the giver, but about the recipient's response as well.
Precisely. Seneca even uses this imagery of the gods to illustrate this point. He said that just as the gods bestow their blessings freely, even on those who might seem undeserving, we should strive to emulate that divine generosity in our own lives.
I love that imagery. It really challenges us to move beyond transactional thinking, you know, where we're constantly trying to earn or deserve God's favor.
Exactly. It highlights the fact that true gratitude isn't just about saying thank you, but allowing that gratitude to shape our actions and our choices.
So how do we do that? How do we take these insights about patronage and grace and apply them to our modern lives? How do we move from just receiving God's grace to becoming those conduits of grace you were talking about before?
That's a great question. And it's one we're going to be wrestling with as we continue our deep dive. So stay with us.
Wow, this has been a fascinating conversation. Really eye-opening to see the connection between grace and these ancient ideas of patronage. It's definitely given me a new perspective on what it means to live a life of gratitude.
It is really interesting, isn't it? It pushes us to go beyond just feeling thankful, to actually expressing that gratitude in tangible ways.
Okay, so let's talk about the practical side of this. How do we actually do that? How do we become those conduits of grace you were talking about?
Well, I think it all starts with cultivating a deep awareness of the gifts we've received. And I'm not just talking about material things, but those simple everyday blessings that we often take for granted.
Like what? Give me some examples.
Like think about the warmth of the sun, or the sound of a loved one's laughter, or even just that feeling of satisfaction when you accomplish something challenging. These might seem like small things, but they're all expressions of God's grace in our lives.
Yeah, you're right. It's easy to get so caught up in the busyness of life that we forget to appreciate those little moments.
Exactly. And that's why I think practicing gratitude is so important. It's about intentionally shifting our focus from what we lack to what we have, from complaining to appreciating.
So what are some practical ways to do that? Are we talking about gratitude journals or meditation or something?
Well, those could be helpful tools. But honestly, it's about finding what works for you. Maybe it's starting each day by just listing three things you're grateful for, or taking a few moments before bed to reflect on the good things that happened.
Yeah, I like that. Making gratitude a habit, like a way of seeing the world.
Exactly. And as we start cultivating that sense of gratitude, it naturally begins to overflow into our actions. We start looking for ways to give back, to serve others, to share the blessings that we've been given.
It's like that image of becoming a conduit of grace, allowing it to flow through us.
Exactly. And that's where this connection to ancient patronage has become so powerful. Just as those who receive patronage were expected to show their gratitude through acts of service, we're called to respond to God's grace by being those agents of his love and generosity.
And it's not about trying to earn God's favor. It's about responding to the gift we've already received.
Absolutely. It's about recognizing that we're a part of this incredible web of reciprocity, where grace flows from God to us and then outward to others.
This has been such a thought-provoking conversation. I know I'm walking away with a lot to think about.
Me too. And I hope it's encouraged all of you listening to think about how you might embrace this idea of grace as this reciprocal exchange, as a way of life that transforms not only us, but also the world around us.
Well said. And for those of you who want to dive even deeper into this whole concept of patronage, we highly recommend checking out the work of Dr. David da Silva. His insights have been so helpful to our conversation today.
Absolutely. His work provides a really fresh perspective on these familiar passages and sheds light on the cultural context that shaped the early Christian community.
And on that note, we're going to leave you with a final thought. As you go about your day, consider this. How might understanding grace as this reciprocal exchange, where grace must answer grace, how might that transform your approach to relationships, to work, even to those everyday moments? Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the Book of Hebrews.